Prite noted that the brothers of Abel were already at the clearing. Old Father Jarek and the others stood and sat off to one side, many with their heads bowed and hands folded in prayer. Not far from them stood Renark. Prite knew that the man had come out here, though Renark was not acting as an official of the Laird this night. Prite's father wouldn't allow that, for where the Samhaste were concerned, he didn't consider Renark to be possessed of objectivity. Most of the townsfolk were in attendance as well, even many of the children. That surprised Prite for a moment, but then he realized the point of it all. Harsh justice demonstrated civilization, of course, and reinforced societal expectations of behavior. The guardsmen set the chairs they had brought from the castle in the proper place, at the left side of the large, flat stone that old Benivagar would use as his dais, the customary spot for the Laird of Pride to bear witness. Pride took the chair center and forward.
Laird Pride is taken ill this night. A minor case of the gripe, but nothing more. Laird Pride has bidden me to serve as the voice, the eyes, and the ears of Castle Pride this evening.
Pride recognized the importance of this night then, all of a sudden. He was the obvious heir to Pride Holding, as his two older siblings were female. There were rumors of half-brothers, but they were all by women Laird Pride had never formally recognized as wives, and so had no claim to the throne. No, it was Pride's to hold, and soon, too, he believed. Only then did he understand the significance of his father's advice to not reveal his amusement at the spectacle. The crowd went quiet as the minutes turned to an hour. The bonfire marking the clearing before the stone, the signal from Bernivagar of the significance of this night, burned low, casting them all in dim shadows. Finally, a tall, lean figure made its way down the forest path and out onto the flat stone. The Samhaste did not bend with age, as did Father Jarek and even Laird Pride. And Bernivagar was taller than almost any other man in Pride, standing above 6.5 feet. He had wild, almost shaggy gray hair and a long, thin beard that reached halfway down his chest. He wore his simple light green robe, the Samhaste habit, and sandals that revealed his dirty feet and his red painted toenails. He carried an oaken staff that was nearly as tall as he, with a knobbed end that made it look more akin to a weapon than a walking stick. A necklace of canine teeth framed his beard. He looked at Pride only once, gave a slight nod, then squared up to face the general gathering and lifted his arms high.
Who claims grievance?
A young man, his face covered in snot, his cheeks streaked with tears, staggered up before the stone in the Samhaste, which put his head about level with Bernivagar's feet.
I do! I seen him! Bring forth the accused woman!
The crowd parted and a group of men forced a young man and woman forward. Another man, a commoner, bearing a sack in one hand and a pole ending in a small noose on the other, came out after them and moved toward the low-burning fire. Pride knew them, the woman at least, and understood that they were young, younger than he at 18 by 2 or 3 years. Colin Duarnay was her name. He knew her family. Startled, Pride realized that Colin was the daughter of one of Castle Pride's stablemen. She was quite a pretty young thing, and Pride had many times thought of taking her for a night of his pleasure. Her soft hair was the color of straw, and it hung below her shoulders, cascading from her face in silken layers. Her eyes were not the customary blue of the folk, but a rich brown hue. Not dark, but true brown.
Such a waste.
As soon as her hands were untied, Callan brought them up to brush back the hair from her face, but since she was looking down, it fell right back.
And the other?
A young man, barely Pride's age, his blue eyes darting about like those of a terrified animal stumbled through, jabbed hard by a spear and off balance because his hands were tightly tied behind his back.
Are these the two?
Oh, that's the one. Oh, I seen him, right on top of her. And I paid good money for her. Silver coin and 3 sheep.
Which will be repaid in full, nay, thrice, of course. Thrice!
Yes, my lord.
You will be working for years to pay off the debt, you understand.
All my life, if need be.
Then you admit your crime?
The man chewed his bottom lip, then looked from the old Samhaste back to Callan. A long minute passed.
We will need 2 sacks this evening.
Yes! I did it! We did! But she bewitched me with her charms! Pity me, my lord! Pity!
On a nod from Bernivagar, a pair of guards moved over and roughly pulled the groveling man aside.
Have you anything to say, woman?
Callan didn't even look up. They took the guilty man first, throwing him roughly to the ground. Two men sat on him to hold him still, while another pulled off his trousers. The cuckolded husband, meanwhile, went to the bonfire, where a flat-headed iron brand had been set in place, its end now glowing. By the time he lifted it in his gloved hand and turned, the guilty man was staked to the ground. He lay on his back, naked from the waist down, and with his legs spread wide and held firmly in place by leather ties.
Please! Mercy! Mercy! I'll pay you four times, I will! Five times!
The glowing brand went in hard against the side of his testicles. The man jerked so violently that he yanked one of the stakes from the ground. That hardly did him any good, for as he tried to kick his leg over in an attempt to cover up, he merely brought the tender flesh of his inner thigh against the side of the hot iron. The wronged husband pressed harder and slapped the flailing leg away. Finally, he stepped back. The guards grabbed the crying boy by the ankles and unceremoniously dragged him away. Bernivagar turned his hawkish gaze upon Callan once more.
Have you anything to say?
The woman did not look up. A nod from him had the guards eagerly stripping off her clothing. Again, the aggrieved husband went over to the fire, where the handler was preparing the adder, exciting it and angering it by moving it near the hot embers. With a wicked grin, the dirty man handed over the catch stick, its noose now securely holding the 2-foot-long copper-colored snake right behind its triangular head.
This is your last chance to speak, woman. If you have any words of apology or remorse, this is the moment.
Callan started to lift her head as if she wanted to say something, but then she slumped back as if she hadn't the strength. Priday watched the husband, noting his wince as the guards drew the large canvas bag over his wife's head, pulled it down, then pushed her roughly to the ground and forced her legs inside. Now she flailed wildly and struggled until one of the guards kicked her hard in the back. They drew the drawstring of the sack and kicked her again for good measure. One of the guards pulled up the tied end, and the other pulled open the mouth of the bag. The husband looked around. Then he thrust the catch stick forward, shoving the adder's head far into the bag. With quick hands, the guards helped him force the rest of the squirming snake in, and the husband released one of the drawstrings and pulled back the empty catch stick. The guard drew tight the string and tied it off, then jumped back, letting the sack fall over. For a long while, nothing. It went on for many minutes. When finally the bag went still, Priday sat back in his chair, chilled to the bone.
Stake her up at the end of the road, that all workmen might be reminded of her crime.
With that, the old Samhaste turned and walked away, and the crowd began to disperse.
It'll take her 2 days to die, unless an animal gets her.
Aye, and with the poison burning her head to toe all the while.
The prince sat very still watching the sack. One delicate bare foot had come out of the end and was twisting slowly in the dirt and twitching. Priday finally managed to turn his eyes and consider the monks. Father Jarek was staring at the departing Samhaste, his expression obviously uncomplimentary. The prince noted the young and stern one, Bathales, had his arms crossed over his chest, eyes set determinedly. Bathales seemed the most accepting of the group, standing in particular contrast to the monk beside him, a young man Priday did not know, whose look of horror and distress was so pronounced that the prince had to wonder if the man's eyes would freeze open. Obviously, most of the monks had no liking for this severe Samhaste justice, but they hadn't the power to do anything about it. Priday understood, as did his father, as did Bernivagar and the monks of Abel. This scene was about much more than the life of one pitiful little peasant girl. It was about an old Samhaste's declaration of his continuing importance. This was justice in Hants, in God's year 54. They traveled the wide and smooth way out of Ethelbert Holding for many miles to the west, then turned to the north, where the road fast dwindled to a simple cart path, a pair of wet, muddy ruts in the grass.
Lord Ethelbert is more interested in pressing forward to Delaval City than to my home of pride, apparently.
I prefer the untamed lands.
I know the land, even after all these years. In 2 weeks' time, we will find Chapel Pride. We'll not get lost.
Little is the care if we do. The unknown road oft brings unexpected joys.
And oft brings unexpected dangers. The land is rife with powries and goblins, so said Laird Ethelbert. Even when I left, the beasts were all about.
I am just a two.
The words drew Dinard's eyes back to the ivory and silver hilt of the sword that pointed diagonally above her left shoulder. He squeezed her hand again, and they strode off along the forested trail. Later that same night, on a hill open to the stars above, Senui ran her hand over the sleeping Bran's shoulder. The air was warm, but the evening breeze carried a slight chill that amplified and tingled as it moved across the perspiration that still clung to Senui's naked body. Their lovemaking had been particularly energetic that night, with Bran almost ferocious in his advances, and as urgent in the act itself as he had been in their first encounter, years before in the Walk of Clouds. Was he trying to reaffirm his love for her to himself? Senui had to wonder. Was his insistence of action a way for him to defy the obvious disdainful glances that he knew the two of them would face among his unworldly, even intolerant people? Senui smiled the thought away, not over-concerned. Had her beloved Bran Dinard felt any more at ease during his first days in Jacintha or among the xenophobic tribes in the Desert of Bear? Had he not been a curiosity of sorts when he first had come to the Walk of Clouds, with his chalky skin and strange ways, his words of blessed Abel and magic gemstones? Senui understood. In making love to her that night under the stars in the summer breeze, Bran had tried to prove to her that he loved her beyond anything else, and that there could be no severing of that tie. And he had tried to prove to himself, she presumed, that the curious and doubting expressions of other people mattered not at all.
My love.
She held faith in his love for her and never doubted her own for him, and she was doubly glad of that now, for she knew. With her gestitude training, her senses attuned so well to the rhythms of her own body, the mystic knew. She brought a hand down to her belly.
That is it.
Senui moved around the side of the rocky jut on the hillside to stand beside her husband and followed his gaze to the distant dark shape of a formidable castle anchored in the back by a wide, round tower.
Castle Pride, home of Laird Pride, who hosts my chapel.
Dinard glanced toward the setting sun.
This night only if we travel long after Bokri.
Sunset. Bokri is sunset, as Bonuel is sunrise. Tomorrow morning, then, I am anxious to return to my home, 'tis true, but I will miss our time alone.
Since they had agreed that they need not make Castle Pride that night, they walked leisurely and on a meandering road, with Senui often rushing to the side to further explore some interesting sight or sound. For their camp, they chose a bare-topped hillock, and from its apex, as the sunlight began to fade, they could just make out the southernmost reaches of the new and expanding road, less than a mile away.
Your world is changing.
Greatly, I would guess, when these roads are connected. But for the better. Better to spread the word of Abel. Better to take the healing powers of the Soul Stones to the ends of the land.
Better to move about your armies.
If in the pursuit of the monsters that plague the land, then yes.
Senui nodded and let the conversation go at that. She was Jesta too, and so she had studied the history of the southern lands of Bear extensively. Many times over the centuries had empires arisen, building roads and marching their armies all about. Most of those roads were lost again now, as were the empires, reclaimed by the desert sands. Senui wondered then if the roads of other empires had crossed this land of haunts, ravaged by time and swallowed by regrown forests. She expected as much. She fell asleep comfortably in Bran's tender embrace that evening, her vision of the stars above and thoughts of eternity taking her to a quiet and peaceful slumber. Like all Jesta too, she had trained her body to remain alert to external stimuli even in the deepest sleep, and she awakened sometime near midnight. Senui extricated herself from her husband's arms and slowly rose to her feet, staring off to the north, toward Pride. She saw the flicker of a torch through the trees, perhaps halfway to the firelight glow showing in the windows of Castle Pride. Dinard crawled over beside her.
What is it? A party?
No, not a party.
Senui began to dress, and not in the flowery white clothing she typically wore through the days, but in a black suit of silk, the dress of a nighttime hunter.
You mean to go down there through the darkness?
In this instance, the darkness might prove our best ally.
Denard grabbed his clothes and rushed after, not wanting to lose sight of Senui in the night. A few minutes later, the monk found himself crouched behind a bush beside Senui. She motioned for him to hold his place, and she crept forward toward the flickering. The hairs on the back of Denard's neck were standing on end now, for he could recognize the language of the speakers and knew them to be Powri's. He felt Senui tense before him, then he moved past so that the scene came into view. A group of 5 Powri's stood at the end of the road, prodding, poking, and taunting a young woman, naked and battered, who had been strung up by her wrists, her feet a foot off the ground.
Ah, but you're a pretty one, ain't ya?
The woman didn't even groan in response, just hung there, twisting slowly and seeming very near to death, if not already there.
Pretty and with bright blood, eh?
With a sudden movement, the dwarf brought a knife up and across the inside of the woman's thigh, opening a large wound. The Powri slapped his beret against the flowing blood. Senui had seen enough. She leapt from the bush, drawing her sword.
Be gone from here!
The Powri stared at her for just a moment, then lifted their own weapons. Senui charged forward so suddenly the leader didn't even have time to react. She retracted her sword immediately, then flashed it left to right, parrying a swinging Powri axe. Using her momentum, she slid the blade hard across the axe and thrust ahead, forcing the Powri to suck in its belly and scramble back. Senui couldn't finish the move, for another Powri came in hard at her side. The other Powris came in hard. Brother Denard had hardly registered that his wife had even moved. Still crouched in the brush, he tried to make sense of this whirling and furious combat before him. Denard knew he had to help. Senui was hopelessly outnumbered. He brought forth the smooth gray stone and held it up before his eyes, the Soul Stone. He couldn't go out there physically, he knew, for his appearance and incompetence would likely hinder Senui more than aid her. Thus, he had to go out there spiritually. He had to find his center and free his spirit through the use of the Soul Stone. Denard felt as if he were falling through cool water, and he was standing there, looking back at himself, on his kneeling physical body. His spirit turned and willed himself forward into the fray. He denied his trained revulsion as he approached one Powri and accepted the invitation of its corporeal form. In he went, against his understanding that this usage of the Soul Stone, insinuating himself into the body of another free-willed creature, was among the most trying and repugnant possibilities offered by the gemstone. His spirit dove into the Powri. The Powri was off guard, confused, and in that split second, Denard took control. He saw through its eyes. He felt its limbs as if they were his own. He made the dwarf throw its axe to the ground, then turn and leap upon the dwarf nearest him. Senui had no idea what had just happened, why one of these vicious dwarves would tackle another, but she didn't pause to ask questions. Her sword went out to the right to block a spear. She sprang into the air, tucked her legs, and went right over the dwarf opposite her. She landed lightly right behind the creature, a perfect opportunity to strike hard, but she didn't, diving sidelong instead at the remaining battling Powri. Senui's sword whipped over, coming in diagonal downstrikes at the too slow dwarf, slashing shoulder to hip one way, then the other. Senui stopped suddenly, reversed her grip on the sword, and thrust it out behind her, just in time to meet the charge of another of the vicious creatures. He came forward anyway, for he couldn't break his momentum, and ran right up against Senui. He tried to strike, but Senui whirled and ducked under the blow, moving out to the side of the dwarf, where she gave a great tug on her sword. Senui spun her sword, using its momentum to center her own balance once more as she turned. That dwarf was down and dying, as was the one she had slashed, as was the leader of the group. The other two were up again, off to the side, staring at her incredulously. They turned and ran off. Senui took one step to follow, but stopped at once, turning to regard the hanging woman, then glancing over at the bushes where a shaken Denard came stumbling forth, Soul Stone in hand.
I possessed him.
Senui responded with an absent nod, but was already focusing on and moving toward the woman. She looked up at the rope and then at her sword, but then snapped the sword back into the scabbard across her back. The gestitu brought her palms together before her and again fell into that line of energy that center of power that ran deep from the top of her head to her groin. Senui breathed that power forth into her arms, coursing down to her hands and her trembling fingertips. She placed a hand on the tear in the woman's thigh and sent forth her healing energy and accepted the woman's pain as her own. She felt something then, in the blood, some uncleanliness. But she didn't relent, forcing her energy into the woman, lending her strength.
Senui, do not. Leave her alone. She is an adulteress, or some other such sin.
Is this how your order deals with sinners?
No. No, not the Brothers of Abel. But this is not our province. This justice is the tradition of the land since long before Blessed Abel walked the ways of Hans. In the half century of our church, we have made some gains and offered some concessions. This is the doing of the Samhasts, who once presided over all the folk as the clerics of Hans. The lairds have not seen fit to change.
This is justice?
It is the way of Hans. The woman was convicted, no doubt, and given to the snake.
Senui's head snapped around, and only then did she fully realize the other wounds, fang marks. She understood then the sensation of uncleanliness in the blood, for it was rife with poison.
I will not watch her die.
It is not our place.
Choose your own place as you will. I will not watch her die.
A moment later, to her great relief, Brother Denard was beside her, soulstone in hand. With a look and helpless smile at Senui, he pressed his free hand against the woman and began his own healing, using the magical stone. A few moments later, the two looked at each other again, and Senui nodded and motioned for Denard to grasp the woman. Senui then pulled forth her sword.
Your cloak.
Denard shed his woolen robe, and he and his wife wrapped it about the woman. Then Denard picked her up gently in his arms.
Come along. The Powerys might return with their friends. We cannot take her to Pride, for they will merely throw her in the sack with the snake again and hang her once more. But there may be a place.
Chapel Pride.
Denard nearly laughed aloud at the notion, for he knew well that Father Jarek, kindly as he could be, would not go against Laird Pride in this matter. Nor would Denard, in all good conscience, even involve the others of his order in this crime. No, this burden was his own. The middle-aged man stared out the partly open door for a long and silent moment.
Can it be?
He held up a candle before him. He was of medium build, a bit shorter than most men, with a shaggy head of black and gray hair, and with several days of beard evident on his face. One of his eyes was quite dead, showing only milky white, but the other held a lustrous blue-gray sparkle.
Garibald, my heart fills with joy at seeing you alive and well.
Denard was standing before a small stone structure that was constructed on a rock out in the water, a dozen feet from the shore, along a sometimes submerged, sometimes revealed shoal. The house was built in two parts, with this, the lower level, right at the lakeside, and a higher, drier structure a dozen feet above and farther from the shore, on the higher rocks. Even with the two structures, connected by a cave and stone extension, there was little elaborate workmanship showing about Garibald's home. Just two stone-walled rectangles with thatched roofs.
Bran, in the flesh, back from his travels around the world.
Garibald Womack stepped forward and clapped Denard hard on the shoulder.
Come in, come in! You must tell me every detail.
His enthusiasm melted almost at once as he noted the grim expression on the face of his long-lost friend.
I need your help.
If I have shown you anything but...
Denard stepped back and splashed across the shallows to the shore, returning a moment later with the unconscious young woman in his arms.
We found her, at the end of the new road.
Where Bernivagar left her to die, with the blessing of Laird Pride.
Yes.
Are you mad? The woman was convicted and executed. She met the adder in the sack. To the joy of the folk who went to watch, I am certain. You cannot...
I could not leave her out there. We met Powerys dancing about her, ready to take her blood.
Dead is dead. Probably better that way than from the slow poison of the snake. You had to know the truth of her predicament. You've seen old Bernivagar's work before.
I could not leave her.
They'll put you in her place, you fool. You cannot go against the word of Laird Pride. Your own Brothers of Abel were there in attendance, bearing witness.
Please.
You said we. Who was with you? And more important to your own skin, where is he now?
The smile returned to Brother Denard's face and motioned off into the night.
Not he. My wife.
But she is a pretty one.
Will you help us?
What would you have me do? I'm no healer.
Just let us stay here for a bit. That we can tend the girl and keep her safe and warm.
You're to be the death of me.
I know you can hide her. Can hide us. He has tunnels beneath the house. Keeps him safe from powries and goblins. Though I thought you'd have slowed enough by now for them to catch you before you got your old ass into the hole.
Bah! Them stupid ones don't even come around here. If they did, I'd be more likely to stand and kill them all before I'd run like a child into the tunnels. Tunnels or no, she won't be safe if Lord Pride, or worse, his son Priday, discovers that she is missing.
Priday?
Aye, Priday. A boy when you left. A man now. A young warrior with as much fight and mettle as the father ever knew, who makes his reputation daily against the goblins and the powries.
The world moves on without me, it would seem.
Young Prince Priday would not take well to your disruption of old Bernivagar's holy ritual.
Murder is holy ritual?
Not murder. The Samhays carry out the executions and other punishments of convicted criminals.
This young girl was a murderess.
An adulteress.
Senhui looked to Denard, who explained the crime in the woman's native tongue. That explanation did little to alleviate either her confusion or her disdain, however.
Appeasing the Samhastes has always been important to the lairds. You know that.
But you will allow us the use of your home?
Come in and shut the damn door, old fool. And come along to the upper house where it's more dry. And bring along a log or two to throw upon the fire. I've some stew I can heat. And for you, pretty one.
Senhui.
Yes, Senhui. Pray you go behind that curtain and find more blankets for the poor girl.
Prince Priday will see the powry tracks and think no more of it.
Or he will follow your own to my house, and Bernivagar's next ceremony will feature 4 sacks.
A short while later, with Senhui tending Callan by the hearth in the upper house, Denard and Garabon sat opposite each other in comfortable chairs of wood and skins a few feet back, telling the woman of Bear the tales of their long friendship. The two had been fast friends since childhood, and Garabond had even tried to enter the Church of Abel at the same time as Denard. But the court of monks had seen that Garabond's motivation was strictly one of loyalty to his friend, and not wrought of any sincere belief in the church and its precepts, and so he had been refused, even before Denard had set out from Pride Holding to the Mother Chapel in the north. Their friendship had not been as tight when Denard had returned a few years later, the two explained to Senhui, and they both blamed circumstance and no lessening of their almost brotherly love. Denard had been busy in the town and chapel right up to the time when he had departed for the Southland, after all, and Garabond only very rarely went to the town, preferring the solitude of his small farm east of the community.
Sometimes it is easy to forget those things that are truly most important to us.
And this one has always been getting me in trouble.
Or the other way around.
Nah, 'twas your own idea to take the ripened tomatoes from Farmer Filton.
'Twas my idea to take only the ripened ones after you dragged me to his fields.
What are you doing to her?
Senhui had bent over the gravely injured younger woman and slid her hands under the blanket around the poor girl's midsection.
She is offering her healing powers to the poor girl.
Callan Duornay. She was indeed guilty of the accusation of adultery, from what little I heard. But she's not deserving this fate. Poor girl indeed. She uses no soul stone.
Senhui is just a two. Just one of the many marvels I have to share with you.
Denard began recounting his journeys then, from the road to Ethelbert, to the sea voyage around the Belt and Buckle, and all through the wild deserts of Bear to his culminating exploration at the Gestetou Monastery. He spoke with passion and true admiration as he detailed those years spent at the Walk of Clouds with the devoted mystics, and his story lasted until the eastern sky had begun to lighten with the coming dawn. Garabond didn't point out the lateness of the hour, and neither did Senhui, whose work with Callan was hardly finished.
What are you going to do?
In the morning, I return to Chapel Pride with Senhui.
Take care. Things have changed in the 10 years since you left, my friend.
How so?
The work on the road is hard on the people. And Laird Pride, like all the lairds of Haunts, is determined that his holding will not be outdone in this endeavor. But the land is not tamed. Less so than even when you left, I would say.
Laird Ethelbert spoke of goblins and powries.
The powries are as thick as trees, as you saw for yourself. How did you get rid of the beasts? You've never been a warrior.
Denard led Garabon's gaze to Senwi.
Interesting.
So you are not surprised to hear that we encountered powries?
Oh, the bloody caps are all about. They've left me alone for the most part. I don't know why. Mayhap they think my dirty old blood will soil their berets.
Or it could be those tunnels beneath your house.
Perhaps you should move closer to the town.
That would kill me sooner than any powries ever could.
Fie the day that we granted them the safety of our coast. A group of powries came to the shores of Haunts many years ago. Perhaps a score of years ago now. The lairds chose not to confront them, but parleyed instead, granting the dwarves a region of the coast as their own. We have come to regret that generosity.
Your own church did not oppose the decision.
I remember. How fares Father Jerric?
He is getting very old, and looking even older. Rumors say that Brother Bathalace has assumed most of his duties now. More important is the passage of the title of Laird. Laird Pride is robust yet, so many say. But he was not at Bernivagar's court last night. Day by day sees the rise of Pride.
A good man?
That would hardly be my place to judge, though I have heard nothing contrary to that. His courage against the Powries cannot be dismissed, and the soldiers of Castle Pride follow him with great loyalty. He is as proud as he is fierce, some say. But whether that will prove a strength or a weakness in these days of change, who can know?
The conversation drifted away then, and so did the three companions, falling into light sleep right where they sat. Sunlight awakened them soon after, though, streaming in through every crack and opening in Garabon's old house. Denard and Senwi moved to collect their packs.
And what am I to do with her?
She will not likely awaken today.
And we will return to you this very night.
Denard looked all about, then reached into his pack and pulled forth his most prized possession, the transcribed Book of Geste. He moved to the back of the two-roomed upper house and pulled open the partially hidden trap door, revealing a narrow shaft. He tenderly wrapped the tome and went down the hole with it. He returned a moment later without the book to see his two companions, particularly Garabond, watching him intently.
More trouble you're bringing to my house?
It will not remain here for long.
First sign of the Laird's men, and Callan's going down the hole as well.
Gently, I trust.
Quickly.
Denard smiled, knowing the truth of his compassionate friend. Another fine, warm summer day surrounded Denard and Senwi as they moved back to the end of Pride's lengthening road. Workers and soldiers were all around, some studying the myriad tracks, others looking to the empty pole where Callan had been strung.
To think that they meant to work all day under the shadow of the Hanging Woman.
Denard noted that the Powries had apparently returned after the fight and retrieved the bodies of their fallen. Still, the signs of the struggle clearly remained, a puzzle the folk milling about the area were trying hard to decipher.
Are you ready to meet them?
Denard regarded his wife, who seemed so uncomfortable dressed in a typical Haunts woolen tunic. The dress was normal for the land, true, but wearing it, Senwi hardly seemed like any normal Haunt citizen. Senwi looked up at him, her typically calm expression telling him all he needed to know. He took her hand and rose, then crossed out onto the open ground before the work area.
Stand and be counted!
A group of soldiers approached cautiously, fanning out to flank the couple.
Be at ease, soldiers of Laird Pride, for I am of your town. Return now to my chapel.
That's Bran Denard!
Indeed. The time of my mission is ended, and so I return to Pride.
I do not know you.
The soldier was less than 20 years of age, by Denard's estimation, perhaps no more than 16.
I am of Chapel Pride. You would have been no more than a boy when I departed.
It is that monk.
The other soldier slid away his sword and moved closer. Nods of agreement came from all around, and the warriors relaxed. Denard's relief was short-lived, though, for he noted their expressions as they scrutinized Senwi, showing a range of emotions from lewd to curious to dismissive, as one might view a goat or a cow.
"'Twas Powries who ran off with the girl.
What do you know of it?
The speaker was a slender, tall warrior of about Denard's age, whom the monk thought he recognized, though he could not recall the man's name.
Captain Deepin.
Denard nodded his recollection.
We came upon them last night and did battle. They were too numerous for us to retrieve the girl, but we drove them away.
Oh, and yet you escaped.
Because of your gemstones, no doubt.
More the work of my wife.
Layard Pride will hear of this.
Deepin reached out as if to take Denard by the arm. The monk recoiled.
I am for Chapel Pride straight away. Too long have I been out on the road. I will speak with Father Jerick, and will come to the summons of Layard Pride, of course, if I am so called.
The captain eyed him suspiciously, then at Senwi as well. But he did back away a step, clearing the way to the road.
Where did you find that one?
She is my wife, from Bear. And your name is?
Bonagran.
Denard took Senwi by the arm and led her along quickly before the soldiers could reconsider. In short order, the couple were long out of sight of the workmen and the soldiers, walking quickly down the road. Denard slowed their pace when they came to the outskirts of Pride Town and in clear sight of Castle Pride. Considering again the expressions on the faces of those folk at the battle scene, looks from soldier and peasant alike, as they regarded his foreign wife. How might his brothers of Abel respond to her? He wondered if perhaps he should have left Senwi with Garibald.
By the Ancient Ones, it is impossible!
Garibald had come back from his chores to find the woman sitting up in bed, the blankets wrapped around her shoulders.
The poison had you, girl!
Callan kept her head bowed, but Garibald saw her brown eyes glance up at him from behind the screen of her wheat-colored hair.
The woman of Bear, no less, saved your life, girl. She gave you healing.
Have you clothing for me?
Garibald nodded at the foot of the bed, where a tunic and travel cloak were set out.
I will be gone this morn.
Callan moved to the clothing and began to dress, discarding modesty in the face of necessity.
Now, take your time. Where will you go?
My family in the west. They will see to me.
You've friends here.
Callan stared at him for a few moments, then tightened her lips and shook her head.
You need food and rest.
Garibald rushed across the way and pulled open a cabinet and began searching for some food he might offer.
Now, you cannot go out there now, not so soon. They'll see you and guess the truth of it, don't you see? You should let all the whispers of Callan Duwane die away before you venture out anywhere where you might be seen. Memories are short, don't you worry. And soon enough, strong and with all health returned, you'll find your way.
He turned with a loaf of bread in one hand and a cooked chicken in the other, but the door was open, and Callan was gone. Like all of the Abel chapels in Hants, the place was dimly lit and smoky, with few windows and many candles set about.
May I help you, brother?
Yes, I...
Denard! Is it really you?
Brother Bathalace came rushing down the hall to stand right before the returned brother.
Greetings, Brother Bathalace. Long has been my road across ocean waters and through desert sandstorms. It is good to be home.
Father Jerick will wish for a full recounting as soon as is possible.
Of course.
You are Brother Brandenart, who went to Bear. Oh, I hope to serve my own mission soon in that same land.
And better will you be, if you are so blessed.
You have brought back trinkets and insights, perhaps, and tales of conversion.
I have tales more wondrous than anything I expected.
Denard turned from Brother Bathalace.
Senwi, if you would.
He turned back in time to see the astounded expressions of both the monks when his beautiful Berenice wife walked into the chapel.
This is Senwi, my wife.
He saw Brother Bathalace fighting hard, but with only limited success, to keep the incredulity off his face. Brother Denard didn't think much of it at that time. How could the man not be surprised, after all? Little did Brother Denard understand.
Three dead Powrys, so he said.
Captain Deepin spoke to Prince Priday.
Who can know what powers the Beast of Bear brought with her?
Bah! But Prince Priday killed five in the last fight.
Prince Priday accepted that accolade with a nod, though all in the room, including the speaker, knew it to be an exaggeration. He saw one young, promising, and amazingly strong warrior, Bonagran by name, looking at him almost apologetically.
You did not see her sword, Deepin?
Just the hilt of it, and that alone was impressive.
People south of the Belt and Buckle are well known for their crafts. On my last journey to Ethelbert Holding, I saw this clearly. Keep a close watch on this visitor. I would know her movements.
She was with Brother Denard, now in Chapel Pride.
Any news of Callan?
The Powrys took her, so said Brother Dinard. If that is the case, we'll never find enough of her corpse to bother about.
Make sure you take down the hanging pole early in the morning. It may serve to remind our workers of a Powry presence, and I'll have no such distraction at this time. We have far yet to travel and much more road to construct before the season's turn, and many are already grumbling that they must be back to their fields before harvest.
Captain Deepin bowed again, and Priday motioned that it was time for him and the others to go. As soon as he was alone, the prince took up his favorite mug and filled it with mead, which he drank quickly. Then, not satisfied, he moved to a small cabinet across the castle room. He pulled open the door and sorted through the metal flasks within, at last settling on one nearly full of a light brown liquid, a fine Vanguard whiskey. All the while, Priday kept glancing at the door on the right-hand side of the audience room, the portal to his father's wing of the castle. Pride was still in bed and still feeling uneasy, and Priday was beginning to worry that perhaps his father was sicker than he was admitting. That notion elicited a myriad of thoughts in the ambitious young man. He was ready to assume the mantle of Laird Pride Holding, so he believed. Indeed, that was a day he had anticipated for most of his life. But Priday had hoped for a more gradual transition. There were so many nuances to every duty, it seemed, such as his attendance at the trial and sentencing of the adulteress and her illicit lover. Laird Pride understood these subtleties quite well. He knew how to make the peasants love him, even as he broke their backs with difficult labors or took the bulk of their crops and coins. Priday cocked his arm back and only at the very last moment stopped himself from throwing his mug across the room. He would never rule with that type of tact and wisdom, he feared. He was not possessed of his father's diplomacy.
Oh.
After finishing his whiskey, he stormed through the door to Pride's private chambers. He found his father in bed, lying on his back, his eyes sunken and circled by dark rings.
How fare you today, father?
I curse my age.
One of the monks who had gone off on his mission has returned. A brother, Bren Dinard, back from Bear. I do not remember him.
A man of little consequence, no doubt.
He brought with him a brown-skinned woman with strange eyes.
With great effort, Pride managed to lift one hand and offer a slight, dismissive shake.
Yes, it does not matter.
Priday took his father's hand and kissed it, then clasped it. He felt no strength there, and little warmth, little sense of life at all. He knew that he had to get the healers back in here with their soul stones, and had already arranged a meeting with Brother Bathalace for that very night. Priday also understood the limitations of those healers. Again, the prince had to follow two diverging lines of emotions, for beside his fear and pain at watching his father's diminishing health, there was another type of fear, one rooted in ambition and eagerness. He gave his father's hand a slight squeeze, then placed it back atop the old man's chest. He was held there for just an instant, staring at his father and feeling the hints of coming grief, and then he was propelled away by the hints of coming responsibility. By the time he reached the room where Brother Bathalace waited, his step was brisk and alive.
There is word that Laird Pride does not fare well.
Page wins.
I will send Brother Bran Dinard, who is only just returned, to his side post-haste.
Not that one, nor his exotic concubine.
You have heard, then?
I have.
And you do not approve?
The Church of Abel approves? You would open your texts and hearts to a beast of bear?
Perhaps I should tend to your father myself.
To what end? Will Laird Pride again feel the vitality of youth?
My lord.
Well, that is what we will now need in this changing world. The roads will connect us all, perhaps as early as the summer after next. What challenges might Pride Holding find in that new reality, when cities coalesce in a myriad of alliances?
Your father's experience
is founded upon the old reality of individual holdings. It is time for all of us to look forward. Yes. Perhaps Brother Bathalace should be the one to tend ailing Laird Pride.
The monk wiped a hand across his mouth, but did not, could not, blink.
How fares old Father Jerrick?
He is well, for such an aged man.
Yes. His successor will be determined as much by the Laird as by the Church of Abel, of course. Tell me more of this Brother Dinard fellow, and of the exotic goods that he brought back from his journeys through the wild lands of Bear.
There may perhaps be a place for your concubine here at the chapel, though I warn you that your behavior is unseemly.
She is my wife. Denard knew that Jarek's error was neither benign nor a simple misconstruing of his relationship with the woman of Bear.
Your concubine.
She is as much a part of my heart as any wife could be.
Denard looked across the small room at Brother Bathyllus for support, but found none forthcoming on the icy visage of the monk.
Any ceremony, and of course I agree to such, would be a formality. Following the vows of marriage Senwi and I already exchanged in Southern Bear.
Vows unrecognized by the Church of Abel.
True enough, Father. And so I say again that I willingly submit.
Your concubine will agree to forsake the ways of the jester too? Hmm? For of course no brother of Blessed Abel can enter a sanctified union with a woman who is not devout in her faith to Blessed Abel. Would you not agree, Brother Bathyllus?
Of course, Father Jarek. The logic is self-evident.
Ah. Well?
Well?
Will this woman, Senwi, willingly renounce the ways of her current religion and devote herself to understanding and following Blessed Abel? Do you suppose that to be the case?
Brother Denard couldn't find the words to answer, but he was already shaking his head anyway.
Nor do you believe that she should move away from this cult, do you, brother?
Father, there is a joining here of beauty and possibility.
In you and Senwi.
In Abel and Jess.
Brother, you went to Bear to enlighten, not to be enlightened.
But if such was an unintended consequence...
Brother, do you ask me to detail the possibilities before you if you have moved away from the teachings of Blessed Abel?
After a long pause, Brother Denard could merely shake his head.
There may be a place for your concubine here at the chapel. I would ask for a measure of discretion, though. You, we all, must serve as examples to those around us, after all. And while your physical needs are understandable and perhaps undeniable, you would do well to...
Brother Denard wasn't listening, for his mind had wandered down a sand-swept Berenice road and to a place that he realized he badly missed at this terrible moment. Had he erred by returning to Hans, to his church and his home? There sat Jarek, seeming perfectly content, having had his say. Brother Denard simply had no answer and no argument.
I trust her not at all. The idea that a dangerous and armed beast of Bear is living right beside Castle Pride bodes nothing good.
Rest easy, my son.
Laird Pride seemed his old self again after his week-long bout with sickness. Through no fault of Brother Bathyllus, who had done little in the way of real healing, Pride knew.
This brother didn't... What was his name?
The old man spoke to Renark, who stood in his customary spot behind the throne.
Brother Brandenard, my lord. A man of little consequence, so I was told. By you, I believe.
But this woman...
Yes, she would indeed seem more formidable, my lord. By all reports, she slew several Prowries in fair combat in a single fight.
She is in the care of the monks?
Yes. Brother Bathyllus has informed me that this beast of Bear will likely remain in the chapel as a worker.
What would you have me do in that case? Am I to deny her my trust when the brothers of Abel have seen fit to take her in?
It is not within their province to deny your claim.
She should be surrendered to the laird until her disposition can be properly determined.
You fear her? Or is it perhaps that you fear that her reputation will outshine your own?
Pride narrowed his eyes and crossed his arms over his chest.
Forgive me, my son. I have seen this creature from Bear from afar, and she is but a wisp of a thing.
Who slew several Powries in combat.
Would you have a stranger, a foreigner, a beast of Bear capture the hearts of the peasants as a hero? A foreign creature who is allied with the brothers of Abel and not with the Laird of Pride Holding? She should be surrendered to Castle Pride at once. Father Jarek is not overfond of her anyway, from what Brother Bathyllus has told me. I doubt he will argue against your request.
You would have me take her into Castle Pride and what? Imprison her?
Until we can understand her true nature and her intent in being here, yes.
Laird Pride paused, then looked back over his shoulder at Renark, who merely shrugged.
I will go and speak with Father Jerick.
A wave of dizziness had Senwi leaning back in the cool shadows of an alcove, broom in hand, when the main door banged open and Laird Pride and his entourage entered the chapel. Senwi had been uncomplaining, accepting the position offered her by Brother Bathalace as a cleaning servant in the chapel. Denard had not been pleased, of course, but Senwi had counseled him to patience. At least the two of them could spend some time together by this arrangement, which was much better than an alternative that had him serving in this dark place with her somewhere away. As a disciplined jester, too, Senwi didn't fear work, after all. Without apparently noticing the woman hidden by the shadows, the Laird and his escort swept through the room and down the side corridor toward Father Jarek's private quarters. Senwi stepped out of the alcove and glanced all around. She knew that this was an unusual visit, and she sensed something deeper, some notion that the secular leader's presence here had something to do with Bran Denard's return. Seeing no one watching her, Senwi leaned the broom against the wall and moved off. She headed down the corridor, turning the corner to see the Laird enter Jarek's private room. Senwi paused at the wall and gathered her concentration, then lifted her chi, lightening her body weight as she scaled the decorated wall. She crawled sidelong atop a ledge, moving right above the now closed door to a transom so she could look down upon the private meeting. They were exchanging formal greetings, and Senwi reconsidered her course. What was she doing here? What business was this of hers? Shaking her head at her foolishness, she began to ease away, but stopped short.
It would not be wise for the brothers of Abel to harbor a dangerous animal.
We are assessing her.
It hit Senwi that they were speaking of her. She hit the ground running, slipping back into the main area of the chapel and then out the door. She thought that she should go to Denard, but wasn't sure where he might be. In the tiny prayer rooms, likely, but he would not be alone. Senwi went out and around the corner of the building, moving into the alleys between the chapel and the castle. She found a quiet, secluded spot and leaned back against the brown stone wall, overcome by lightheadedness. Her hand went instinctively to her belly, to the child growing there.
They are going to tell you that I must be turned over to Laird Pride.
They will not.
Brother Denard started to argue, but he stopped short and leaped forward, grabbing his suddenly swaying wife.
You are right. Senwi.
I am with child. I am pregnant with your child.
Then, his eyes moist, Denard hugged his wife close, burying his face in her black hair and wondering if anything in the world could be more wonderful. Finally, after a long while, Bran managed to move back to arm's length.
My church will sanction our marriage only if you disavow the teachings of the Jester Two.
Senwi's expression went cold immediately.
Which, of course, you cannot do. Nor should you. I embrace Jest as wholly now as I did in the Walk of Clouds.
But your brethren will not approve.
Not yet. These things take time. I will show them the truth, Senwi. It is my place in the world now. Well, that and serving you as husband and our child as father. I will teach them and persuade them.
They will insist that I am handed to the charge of Laird Pride. I heard them myself. He fears me for some reason.
Or he wishes to learn from you. Might it be that Laird Pride has heard of your exploits against the Powrys?
He likely would have, since you boasted of it to his soldiers.
Then perhaps he wishes to have you teach his soldiers or his son.
Senwi's lips went very tight, and she shook her head.
I just mean...
I am vulnerable now.
She took Bran's hand and placed it on her belly. He could hardly draw breath. He turned his hand over and clasped Senwi's tightly, pulling her close. He looked up at the sky as late afternoon turned to twilight.
Come. We will get you out to Garabon's house, where you will be safe. I will tell my brethren that you have departed for Bear, that you could not accept the terms of their demands, and I will remain steadfast in my support of your choice. I will teach them. I must teach them. I see my duty now to my brethren as clearly as Blessed Abel must have seen his own when he discovered the glories of Pimmeninnikat and the sacred gemstones. This is my place in life, my place in the wider world.
The couple went out soon after, as darkness fell across the land. Before the dawn, Brother Bran was on his way back to Chapel Pride, clutching the Book of Jest, his expression one of complete determination. He would teach them. Senwi awakened and immediately tried to rise. A wave of nausea sent her tumbling back to the cot. As soon as she saw Garibald coming through the door toward her, she realized where she was, in the tunnels beneath his house. And she remembered her last conversation with her husband. Denard had wanted to return at once to Chapel Pride with the Book of Jest. He was convinced that he would sway the brothers of Abel, that he would enlighten them as he had been enlightened. Senhui didn't believe it for a moment. She had counseled Bran against returning, or at least against returning with the book. But he was angry, livid over the dismissal of their marriage by his brethren, and outraged at the notion that Senhui would be turned over to anyone. The discussion had gotten heated, Senhui remembered, with Denard shaking his head so violently that it seemed as if he were using the movement to physically deflect her naysaying. Then, in the excitement of the moment, the dizziness had returned, had knocked Senhui off her feet. She remembered being carried to a cot and gently laid on it by Denard. She remembered his bending low and kissing her, and leaving her with a promise that he would make them understand. She settled back down and closed her eyes, finding her center and inner balance.
Trust Bran. He's a good one. He'll let them know the truth of it all.
Senhui kept her eyes closed and remained focused internally, though the man's words did register with her. She didn't doubt Garibald, nor did she lack faith in the abilities of her husband. Father Jarek and Brother Bathalace already understood the truth, at least from a practical point of view. They understood perfectly well that Denard honestly believed that he had found an extension of their religion, a supplement that strengthened and did not diminish the words of Blessed Abel. Senhui believed the same thing.
He'll be all right. You must trust Bran.
Brother Bathalace wasn't opening up. Brother Denard could see that clearly as he sat across from him. Denard clutched his precious Book of Jest to his chest, huddling over it like an eagle protecting its kill.
You presume much, brother, to think that we are in need of further enlightenment. The teachings of Blessed Abel are not open-ended and inviting of addition.
But even Blessed Abel was ignorant of the truths of the Jester too.
As soon as the words left his mouth, Bathalace widened his eyes and recoiled, and Denard knew that he had erred.
Those truths are extensions. Contained herein are beauteous revelations that enhance all that Blessed Abel has taught us.
Then you are saying that Brother Abel was not God-inspired? You are saying that the words God spoke to Brother Abel were not revelations of divine truth, but merely revelations to him of a truth that already was known to man? A truth already known to the beasts of Bear?
Brother Denard forced himself to continue to present the book. He even leaned closer so that Brother Bathalace couldn't ignore the large tome. Finally, his face a mask of suspicion, Bathalace took the great book and set it upon his lap. Still looking at Denard, his eyes narrow, he flipped the cover open and read Denard's letter, a two-page introduction that was virtually the same argument that Denard had been making to him for more than an hour now. When he finished, Bathalace paused and looked back at the hopeful Denard, then turned to the next page and glanced down, perplexed.
What is this?
It is written in the language of Jest, one similar to that of Bear.
I did not know that the beasts could write. What would you have me do? Admire the curvature of your lines?
I will instruct you in the language.
Could you not have simply translated the work?
It would not be exact. And it was a condition of the Jester too, that any who would peruse their secrets do so in their language. Learning the language is part of the discipline required to truly appreciate the knowledge contained within, you see?
A condition of the Jester too? They do not willingly share their insights?
They do not proselytize, no. Theirs is a light that must be attained by the willing, not forced upon the reluctant.
Are you not proselytizing right now?
I am not Jester too.
What are you then?
I am your brother.
And you will teach us how to read this language of the Jest.
I will.
And when we read this book, we will learn that Blessed Abel was not wholly correct.
The form of that question left it unanswerable by poor Denard. Brother Bathalace stood up, the tome wrapped in his arms. He looked hard at Denard for a moment longer, then gave a curt nod, turned, and left the room. Brother Denard slumped in his chair, glad of the reprieve. He held no illusions that his initial discussion of the delicate subject had gone well.
B-
The Saga of the First King is continued on the next disc.